2015 through 16 sport fishing regulation proposals. This is a briefing and a public hearing for which we've been assigned 2 hours. Really?
Thank you. I'm not sure we'll take all that time today.
Craig Burley.
Thank you, Craig. That was a great presentation.
Thank you, Vice Chair.
And your colleague, Chris, welcome.
Yes, thank you. For the record, Craig Burley, Fish Management Division with me, Chris Donnelly, Inland Fish Program Manager. And this presentation is primarily to focus on public comment that we've received to date. And then at the end, we've provided, I believe, ample time for any public that want to provide testimonies.
As well as having moved to this location.
Yes. So today what we'll do is we'll cover briefly the process that we've used to date for the rulemaking, the timeline, and public involvement opportunities, as well as cover the written comment that we've received online for not all the proposals, but those proposals where we received a good amount of comment, and then close with an opportunity for the public to provide comment here in front of you today. And so this year we're focusing on sport fishing rules in the Columbia Basin. These are our game fish rules. We'll next year focus on those rules in the freshwater areas in the Puget Sound and coast. And then in 2016, we'll focus on our marine waters, looking at marine finfish, forage fish, and shellfish species. And again, this year we accepted public proposals to address critical conservation needs as well as to provide a recreational opportunity. And a note here to clarify that our salmon rule proposals that we received through this process, while we're not addressing those here, we have forwarded those for consideration during our salmon season setting north of Falcon process. In April through June time period, we solicited public proposals online. We received 166 of those proposals. And in evaluating those proposals, we were able to combine similar proposals, and ultimately we elected to move forward for further consideration 32 of these proposals, and the resulting about 46 proposals where we've recommended not receive further consideration. However, at the end of the presentation, I'll come back up and talk about three that we have received some comment on to let you know what folks are saying about those. After we developed those proposals, then we went and solicited public comment on those proposals back on August 21st, and we extended that comment period through December 1 of this year. We received a number of public comments, and there's a few that will stand out here that will capture, particularly Natchez River, I think, is the rule that received the most comment. And then in at the September 26-27 commission meeting, we provided a briefing where our policy staff from each of our regions came here and provided you a briefing on those proposals. And we'll utilize a similar strategy here today to cover the public comment that we received. Again, today is primarily focused on public hearing, and the January commission meeting, January 9-10, we'll be asking for a commission action on the proposals. And then this year, after adoption, those rules will take effect on July 1st, 2015. And we've moved those dates forward so that we can better incorporate both our sport fishing rules as well as the salmon rules into our pamphlet so that the public can see those when they're available. So The process today will have Chris Donnelly will cover public comment that we received on Columbia Basin-wide proposals, as well as he's will present summary of information for Region 1. John Whalen, our regional program manager, is not available today. So Chris has agreed to cover Region 1. And then Jeff Korth, our regional fish program manager for Region 2, will cover his proposals. John Easterbrooks from Region 3. And John Weinheimer, district biologist in Region 5, will be covering the proposals for his region. And then I wanted to just point to your notebooks that you have before you. In the tab under the sport rules, you'll have a summary document that summarizes the proposals that are being considered, as well as the public comments received for each of those proposals. And then, in addition to that, the draft Washington Administrative Code language that will be adopted, or at least is drafted based on the proposals that you're considering, are also included in the notebook. And so with that, then, I'd turn the mic over to Chris Donnelly for Columbia Basin proposals.
Madam Chair, Commissioners, thank you for having me here today. I'll deal with this portion of the Columbia Basin-wide proposals, so those that are a little broader in geographic scope, and go through the proposed rule and then hit on the high points of the comments that we received from the public. So do you want me to run this? Does it go here? First, remove internal combustion motors prohibition on small streams. And this really is a housekeeping issue. If you read the current regulations, there are streams where we do not prohibit combustion motors that really are infeasible to run a combustion motor on. So this makes it clean in terms of removing some of those from the rules. Public comment that we heard from that, streamlining regulations is a welcome change. I think there might have been a bit of sarcasm in that comment. specifying that unless the stream specifically is open to a powerboat, it's closed, which would be a little bit of a different concept, but seemed something to think about. And not clear on where this came from, but we did hear it, and that the proposal was unclear. And I think it's this confusion about where we do and don't allow people to run a powerboat. In the case of these streams, we think it's reasonably clear because these are very small streams, and we're not actually interrupting any type of recreation that occurs or could occur based on this regulation proposal. 10 car of flying fishing gear, as we discussed back in September, this is a petition that came before the commission last spring. It was deferred to us to address in the regulation process, which we have. It's a simple modification of the definition of fly fishing only waters to include something about tenkara gear as being acceptable. Tenkara gear is an acceptable Japanese style of fly fishing, so it's reasonably clear to be able to talk about that specific name. response we heard back, most comments were supportive. There's a number of fly anglers out there that considered it fly fishing only. I had personal comments from individuals that they were already doing it and didn't realize they were violating the rule, so it does seem like it's something that we should catch up with. Opposing comment, enforcement is already stretched too thin and it's difficult to enforce, and I'm not sure that I understand the logic of this, but I do get the concern that enforcement is thin. And then the idea that allowing tenkara would cause dappling, which is another technique in fly fishing, but we don't have rules today that outlaw or make dappling something that's not an acceptable strategy or fishing technique. The next one is...
I've got to ask.
Yes, ma'am.
What is that?
Dappling?
Yes.
It would essentially be 10 car fly fishing where you would put out basically just the length of your leader and on small streams reach out through a bush and put the fly on the water. Very common and exceptionally small stream fishing, an eastern technique that started with brook trout streams. But we do see that and higher order streams in the mountains. Statewide general rules for walleye. Our desire with adjusting these rules is to essentially make it simpler for walleye anglers to fish across the state. We would like to simplify the rules from the perspective of now proposing a minimum size of 12 inches, an 8-fish daily limit, no more than 1 over 22. This rule is consistent with all of our major walleye waters, excepting Lake Roosevelt, which has a different one from a conservation perspective, and it pulls those rules into one set. So if an individual wants to fish what we would consider a major walleye water in the state, this rule would cover them. Right now, we've got divergent rules, some left from many years ago, some adjusted from a conservation perspective that's no longer needed. So this would just sort of coalesce those all those bodies of water under one rule and eliminate some enforcement issues that arise. And there's no biological reason to have those rules. So the comments that we heard from folks is change the length but not the limit. The inference being that they don't like the ability to harvest small fish because there isn't a utilizable amount of flesh on that fish. The anti-walleye crew folks in this would say allow unlimited harvest, which we do consider. I would submit to you that Lake Roosevelt with a 16-fish bag is a conservation move, and when we are forced with conservation issues, we will take those types of steps. Change the length to 14 or 15 kind of gets back to the original comment that we talked about in terms of what they consider utilizable. And there was some questions about the science around this proposal. We had provided a briefing in September to the Fish Committee looking at Banks Lake and how this would impact Banks Lake, which is the largest water that would have a rule change. We can provide that to the remainder of the commission if we need to. We think the science would support this type of rule. We don't see over-exploitation as a problem. In most walleye waters, our problems lie around overpredation, and addressing that with increased harvest and allowing them to harvest them at smaller sizes would allow us to deal with some of those biological concerns. The next rule, modify some year-round lakes to March 1 opener. Essentially, this is just to get a little more fervor around lowland lake fishing in places where we are currently stocking in late February on a year-round lake and then telling people those fish are there. This would give us the opportunity to close that fishery, stock it full of fish, and then have a marketable product to go back out to the public and say, here's an opportunity to fish. We consistently hear from retailers and manufacturers that openers generate excitement, and so this rule is addressed trying to is trying to address that issue with those individuals. The comments we heard from the public, it's a welcome change. There's a number of people in opposition to this that see it as a loss of opportunity. Not sure what they mean by these are not natural lakes, but that was captured in there. Removes the opportunity for families to enjoy during the winter months, and it will empty faster of fish if we do it this way. Not sure that I agree with that, but I can see their point. On to stream strategy. So this will be highlighted in all of the regions that talk with you today about it. I'll give you a brief overview of stream strategy from a Columbia Basin-wide perspective, and those issues that are regional in terms of comment or specific to that region will come up as other individuals speak to you. The overarching concept behind the stream strategy is that all river streams or beaver ponds are closed unless they are listed in the pamphlet, with the objective being that we adjust the rules based on conservation need. And this graphic that's in the slide that shows sort of a continuum from the healthiest fish populations up to those with needing the highest protection then at the peak of that pyramid, that represents sort of the gradient that we would judge. And if you look in your notebook, I believe the actual strategies A through F are listed on table on page 11. Just representing here sort of graphically how we make that decision. Once we complete regions 1, 2, 3, and 5, that now means that we have completed stream strategy statewide. So pulling these four regions in with regions 4 and 6 would allow some consistency in how our stream regulations read. Comments that we heard back, overarching, a number of individuals believe this is a solid approach for salmon steelhead conservation and recovery. However, they do see that there is some potential for places to be lost that are currently fishing opportunity. They do see that this provides opportunity for a number of catch and release waters that don't currently exist based on the way the continuum is structured. The detractors would say this makes regulations more complicated. Others would say that they prefer fly fishing only and trout catch and release so that mortality is close to zero. I believe that supports the continuum that we're representing here. And again, back to it eliminates opportunity. And to add on to that, our experience in regions 4 and 6 is that there is some opportunity that's lost in this because there's a lot of streams, some that we would not have accounted for that get covered and closed. However, in the rule processes following, we did go back with the public and pick up as many of those as we could, and we encouraged those individuals to follow up with us and let us know if we missed something so that we could get it back into the open and less listed closed. So with that, I'll open it to questions, but that's the basin-wide proposals and comments. Great. I'll move on to Region 1. As Craig referenced, I'm filling in for John Whalen today. So if you ask a really tough question, then we'll have to defer to John maybe. Region 1 proposals that you did see in September are Snake River Sturgeon, expand to catch and release only. Spring and Blue Lakes, year-round season, so that's expanding what's currently has a closure on it to a year-round season. And then the Region 1 stream strategy and the specific rules under that stream strategy that we'll discuss that will likely elicit comment and are the largest overarching issues for stream strategy in Region 1. So Snake River Sturgeon above Ice Harbor Dam. The proposal is to go to catch and release and allowing no retention. Eliminates harvest while assisting in rebuilding weak populations in that portion of the Snake River, and it aligns with the rest of the Columbia River and Snake River impoundments that are currently close to harvest. Public comment back is that they agree closing the season entirely for a few years so the population can rebound would be prudent. They would like us to consider additional enforcement to work on eliminating poaching, and not unlike many things we discussed, they question the science that supports our conclusions. Region 1 stream strategy. So you saw these in September, and I'll just highlight them again. There's a Toucannon River mouth definition change, the mandatory retention of hatchery steelhead, most specifically the biggest issue was on the lower Grand Ron River, the Palouse River two-pole opportunity, and the Sullivan Creek, which is a Westlow cutthroat trout conservation rule proposal. Toucannon River mouth, the graphic says it all. It basically, we've had some difficulty with defining the current line within the pamphlet. This graphic would be captured in some sort of a map, which would be placed in the pamphlet to assist anglers in being clear about where we think the mouth is and allowing us to set regulations and enforcement and enforce those rules more easily. Mandatory hatchery steelhead retention. This not only applies to the Grand Ron, but the Snake River, Walla Walla, Touche River, and the Toucannon as well. I think the name speaks for itself. Yes, sir. Yeah.
Commissioner Holtzmiller.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Chris. Trust me, you didn't get all the public comments on this one. My poor phone's about to melt down over this. And I think it's kind of a twofold deal. Are you proposing The lower 2.5 miles has been fly fishing only, correct?
Correct.
Are you talking about making that part of the retention and changing? Because I'm asking you, so I'm 100% clear. Is that still going to remain fly fishing only, or is that going to go to a?
Well, it's never been fly fishing only. It's a selective gear fishery.
Fishing, okay.
The proposal is not to change the gear type.
Okay.
There's a number of different moving targets here in terms of whether it's mandatory in the lower 2.5 miles or whether we would simply allow harvest.
Right.
Because today it's catch and release only.
Right.
So thinking about the three options of stay the way it is, allow harvest, or make it mandatory, those three have all been discussed, and we would like input on what the preferred alternative would be, understanding that the department, from a policy perspective and a biological and conservation perspective, sees a need to control the proportion of hatchery spawners, and this is one tool that we can use to do that. So for sure, we are not set on a pathway forward from today. And that's why we're here today, is to bring up comments from the public and obviously get your input, because I'm sure we haven't heard all the comment, and I know this is a hot issue in Southeast Washington. So,
and there again, so the commission understands this, Grand Round flows into the Snake, and for the first 2.5 miles, what we were just talking about, the Snake is the definition of combat fishery. I mean, there's times you can walk 1.5 miles down the river on the boats, and they keep a lot of fish out of there. And then with this lower section, it's a quality fishery. And if somebody wants to catch and keep a fish, they can run down the Snake River. Or there again, I was trying to think, how many more miles of the Grand Round would they have for open fishery?
They have about 12.5 miles. From the county line bridge to the Oregon border. And it's a really sinuous stream, so straight line 12 miles, the sinuosity of the Grand Ronde, likely more.
Yeah. So there's plenty of opportunity for catch and keep. And another big thing of it is with the mandatory retention that I'm hearing, and I can see your point on the science, the only thing of it is what Washington puts in about a quarter to a third of the fish that we're fishing on there, the bulk of the fish are Oregon fish, right?
Correct.
So it isn't that it's, this is it. The Oregon has a huge fishery on this stock. And we get people from literally all over the country come there to fish. And everybody's concerned if we go to a mandatory hatchery fish, you have a good day, you're done by 9 o'clock. And then, you know, there again, we could adjust it with bag limits and possession limits, because the possession limit's going to get you really quickly, too, because if you're there for a week and in 2 days you have your possession limit caught, then where are you at? You go home. And one thing that really bothers me is, I mean, how are you going to enforce the mandatory keep, especially from Bogans down to Joseph Creek? Because, I mean, it's just going through. I mean, if people want to turn the fish loose, they can turn the fish loose. And I just hate to see laws where you're making rule breakers out of honest people. And, yeah, there's just a whole lot of things there. I can more than see why you want to encourage people to keep fish. And I think we could adjust the bag limits up. But there are some issues I have with this. So, any questions back at me or not?
No, I don't have any questions. I appreciate that, and I knew that was coming, and I think that's the input we need. In thinking about the tools that we have to set a regulation, we not only have possession limits and bag limits, we have date adjustments or timing when we could allow harvest or disallow harvest. So I think there's a lot of things in the toolbox we could try to set a regulation that is appropriate for what we think our conservation needs, and also appropriate from a business sense, and a recreation sense. So I'm getting the sense, and we need to keep working on this rule, and we are committed to doing that.
There again, and people I've talked to, I've suggested, because, I mean, you can start catching fish there in August in that river. I was trying to think when it actually opens, but, I mean, as far as catching a fish, I was talking to a kid this fall, and in August he was catching fish out of there. What's the season open up, September?
Actually, we've played with that, so I don't remember the current one, so we'll look it up.
Well, I guess the point I'm getting at is whenever it opens, you know, if you we're hold it to February, March, and then get the mandatory, because that's when you get the big flux of people in there around a hatchery or around the acclimation pond and that kind of thing. And like some people told me, there's a lot of Oregon people come and fish, and they're concerned that we're going to run them off if it's a mandatory. It's just, if there's a scientific fact behind the whole deal, I can see it, but.
Well, the challenge in any stream like the Grand Ronde is to have the science to truly understand what your PHOS, or proportion of hatchery on the spawning grounds, is. And in this, if you asked us if we knew that number, I think we would tell you we don't.
Mm-hmm.
And so in from a sense of being conservative about setting a rule that assures you're doing what you can to prevent that issue, this type of rule, consistent with what we've done in the MetHow, mandatory retention is what we would think about. Now, having said that, that doesn't mean it has to be structured that way 12 months out of the year or during the entire season. And so I'm guessing we're going to need to think about some closure dates or something that addresses your concerns that would get to where we need to be from a conservation perspective.
Well, and there again, upping the bag limits. It's really funny because, I mean, I grew up in an area, anything you got on a hook, you tried to get home to eat, you know, and then it's vogue to catch and release. And I've told a lot of people that we need to be catching some of these hatchery fish because it is an issue. And there again, if all the fish were coming out of the Cottonwood Acclimation Pond, it'd be one thing, but we have a considerable hatchery and fishery above us.
And to share with you, we have heard from Oregon. We know they have some concerns about equitability. And so we're trying to consider that and that. But a reminder is that this is not set in stone, and that the workability of this process or the concept behind this is we're coming to you to share these comments, and we will come out with a recommended rule that I suspect will not look like this. And so we'll need to work offline more and do that.
And maybe if I could add, Commissioner Holtzmiller, given the comments that we have received on this proposal, it may be that we can craft some options that we can bring before the commission to better have that discussion and allow the commission to consider some options for this particular rule.
And to back up what you said, as people were hollering at me, I told them, no, we're not setting it in stone this meeting. So,
and that's for sure. And so I appreciate the comment.
Okay, thank you.
We'll go back and come back with something that is more workable. To move on? Okay, so hatchery steelhead mandatory retention, I think we all see that's an issue that we've got further work to do. The next one is the Palouse River two-pole opportunity. Always looking for the opportunity to have a way to sell two-pole opportunity. The Palouse River is a catfish fishery during the summer months, so June 16th to August 31st, when we don't think we have conservation issues from out-migrating smolts, we can allow two-pole fishing opportunity in there for catfish and smallmouth bass and walleye as well, which there's a growing walleye fishery there. And remind you that this is in the deregulated portion of the Columbia River, so encouraging harvest of those species is always something that we're looking at from a conservation perspective. Sullivan Creek Cutthroat Trout, West Slope Cutthroat Trout Conservation, just adjusting the rules in the lower Sullivan Creek to decrease some hooking mortality issues and also increasing bag limits on non-native eastern brook trout. So at this point, given the abundance of West Slope Cutthroat in the stream, we would also put a release all cutthroat trout rule in place. So on to responses. to get at steelhead retention seemed to elicit almost all the responses in the Region 1 set of proposals. Some folks agree with mandatory hatchery steelhead retention. Some would prefer that we not release as many hatchery steelhead in the Grand Ronde or other tributaries. And then some think that there's going to be conflict and increased angler use in an already crowded situation if we allow for a mandatory steelhead retention in certain portions of the Grand Ronde. So, as said, we will get back to you further with that. And with that, I would just open it to questions on Region 1 and then defer to Jeff Korth.
Thank you. Region 1 questions. Any more? No comments from us other than the ones you've already heard. Thank you.
Chair, commissioners, thank you. Still my favorite picture of 2014. Does it all. We'll start with Rufus Woods. The proposal is to eliminate a longstanding rule that we've had on the books about chumming. There was a time when there was quite a few kokanee being entrained out of FDR, in large part because of the large number of fish, period, that were being stocked in FDR. Those fish were piling up in Rufus Woods, and we had quite a good kokanee fishery there for a while. We really didn't want those fish getting any further downstream, so we did what we could to liberalize the rules and make sure that as many of them got caught as possible. Since that time, kokanee management in FDR has changed quite a bit. We aren't seeing the entrainment. We really don't need the chumming rule there. And in fact, at this point in time, one of the big fisheries in Rufus Woods is on a triploid trout, which are purchased from the net pens. There's some commercial net pens in Rufus Woods, purchased by the Colville tribe, usually on the order from 10 to 20,000 a year, and released into Rufus Woods to create a fishery in that area. People have figured out that if you chum, particularly if you chum with fish feed around the net pens, you can catch these triploid trout quite easily. It's a very popular fishery, and it always has been, particularly in times when there was, we'll just call it accidental escapement from those net pens. But at this point in time, the net pens are being running away. We don't see a lot of escapement from them, so it's pretty much the relatively small number of fish that the Colvilles are buying. We also have an agreement with the Colvilles on Lake Rufus Woods where we have attempted to have our rules aligned with the reservation rules, the tribal rules, and that's because of our license reciprocity and we have shore-to-shore reciprocity, too, on those licenses, so you can have either a tribal or a state license if you're on the water. If you're on the shorelines, that's another matter. But if you're on the water, either license will go. So it makes sense that we have the same rules as the tribe does. Most people, I think, basically don't understand the proposal, they would question the need for the license and regulation reciprocity. And like I said, they prefer to get a hold of some fish feed, which I'm sure they can get from the hatchery right there and chum for triploid fish. It's not that you can't catch those fish without it. And these are non-native. They are triploid, and therefore they are sterile. In a similar vein, I think we were misunderstood on this particular proposal. So we would like to create a quality eastern brook trout fishery in Washburn Lake in Okanagan County. From the time that I got here, which is going on 25 or more years ago, we've really cut back on stocking brook trout, eastern brook trout in Region 2. We used to stock quite a number of them. Lakes, streams, early on, not a lot was thought about that. In the time since, of course, there's been problems with introgression in the bull trout areas. Brook trout very easily reproduce, more so even than rainbow or cutthroat in a lot of these places, and particularly in lakes. So you're going to see sort of a common theme later on when we get into the stream strategy about we're starting to come down hard on these runaway populations of brook trout. But there is still a very strong sentiment among anglers that they would like a place where they can fish for brook trout. And so we're looking for ways that we can create eastern brook trout fisheries in such a way that there are not impacts to other other species of fish, particularly native species. Best way to do that, of course, is in a closed system. Washburn Lake is a closed system. They're not going anywhere. We'll stock triploid eastern brook, which, again, is sterile. We reduce the trout daily limit down to one fish, so and use selective gear rules. So basically it's like any of our other quality waters, dry falls or lakes like that that are quality rainbow fisheries. We'd manage this as an eastern brook trout fishery. There are no native trout in this lake either. Unfortunately, we weren't very good about explaining all of that when we summarized this online. So people read it, and they did not realize we were using triploid fish because we didn't tell them. Our fault. And we just didn't do as good a job either in explaining that there were not native fish that were going to be impacted, that the lake was a closed system, and so forth and so on. So we got these kind of comments. While people really liked the idea of having a quality brook trout fishery available to them, they questioned why we're protecting something that's non-native. Triploid or not, it's still non-native, right? That they were worried that they'd be competing with native fish. And this one was a little bit odd because I doubt whether it came from the same person that was talking about the non-native species, because tiger trout are a product of two non-native species crossed between a brook and a brown. But I think what they were really after was tiger trout are, for the most part, also sterile. So I think when people understand it, I don't think there's going to be any further negative comment. We'll move on to the stream strategy. All in all, in Region 2, when we reviewed all our waters, the big winner really was catch and release fisheries overall, and then after that, selective gear rules. We found in the early days, so back in the 90s, particularly when bull trout became listed, we closed a lot of waters because we did not have the information to say what our impacts would be to bull trout. And then also in some waters, wherever we have a threatened steelhead and endangered spring chinook. And we have a lot more information now than when this happened. And so we found quite a few waters that were formerly closed that we could either open up to a catch and release opportunity or at least to increase the use of selective gear rules. And then there were some waters that had statewide rules that was probably a little too liberal with the information we had now. And so as on a conservation move, some of those waters went to catch and release or selective gear rules. And then, as I mentioned earlier on the other eastern brook trout issue, another conservation aspect we're taking is we have quite a few places where we are either increasing the limit on brook trout or, in some cases, brook trout are sort of a bonus species. The eastern brook bag does not count towards your trout bag if it's statewide rules, things like that. The main responses that we got, negative responses, because we had quite a few positive responses and quite a bit of interest in the brook trout liberalization, I'll say. The main rules that we got were in a couple of places, particularly the Okanagan River, where the Okanagan is probably, of the three major tributaries, the Wenatchee, the Methow, and then the Okanagan. The Okanagan is the most difficult river to try to manage salmonids in. It's slow moving and it's very warm, and we have very high pre-spawn mortality in there. And I think the, not sure why that happened. I think that the first comment there, Okanagan River tributaries need more protection, is very well intentioned, and we do look for places where we can protect primarily steelhead is the fish that most of these comments were addressing. In the Okanagan, though, we have quite a bit of information on the tributaries, and most tributaries in the Okanagan, you won't find many steelhead, let alone spring chinook in them. They're very warm, or the habitat just isn't there. The ones that where we do know that there are steelhead, we do have either catch and release or closed seasons, like Bonaparte Creek. We're closed from the mouth up to the barrier. After that, we have statewide rules. Salmon Creek is another one. We work with the Colville Tribe and manage that for steelhead. We do have a season there. That's one, if you remember, we actually have a very liberal eastern brook and smallmouth bass bag limit in there, trying to remove those species in favor of the steelhead, and ad-clipped rainbow, trying to leave more room for the steelhead smolts. So we are doing essentially what the comment asked us to do, where we see good reason to do it. The other comment was in the Wenatchee. I'm not sure whether they're not aware of what opportunity already exists, or if they just, again, want more opportunity. Could be either one. But in that area, and the commenter was from Plain, right up there by Lake Wenatchee, we have several smaller tributaries, two, both Nason, Chihuahua, and I don't remember if there's any for the Little Wenatchee. But I know for Chihuahua and Nason, those smaller tributaries, even though we have endangered spring chinook that utilize the Nason and the Chihuahua heavily, and bull trout, we don't see those fish utilizing those small tributaries, although you will find cutthroat and smaller native rainbow in there. And so we leave those open to statewide rules. So there is opportunity right out the back door there at Plain. I suspect that the commenter just didn't realize that. That's what we have for Region 2. If there's any questions, I'm glad to field them, of course.
Questions about Region 2?
Thank you. We'll turn it over to John Easterbrooks in Region 3.
Great. Thank you, Jeff.
Madam Chair, Commissioners, thanks for this opportunity. We'll start off with two pole fishing opportunities. So this one would provide more opportunity for game fish consistent with bull trout and steelhead conservation goals. We've got two lakes and the two river sections, the lower Yakima between the mouth and Prosser, which is heavily utilized for smallmouth bass, channel catfish, and this it aligns with our recent rule change to remove bag limits and size limits on these introduced predator species in anadromous waters. So we in the lower Yakima, even when we have it open for spring chinook and fall chinook later in the year, most anglers are actually fishing for bass or catfish. And so we want to try to encourage folks to remove those species. In the Hanford Reach, we already have a two-pole opportunity for salmon during the summer chinook and sockeye seasons. And this provides additional opportunity up during a portion of the year when we don't have a conflict with salmon and steelhead upstream in Region 2. The Bumping Lake and Rimrock Lake proposals, those are to basically enhance fishing for kokanee in those two lakes. We do have bull trout in both of those lakes, but these are have very abundant kokanee populations. Rimrock in particular, the population is very abundant, and the fishers tend to be small. They're stunted. They're food limited. And We have underutilization of that resource, and we're trying to encourage people to go out and fish for kokanee and tupole and catch their 16-fish limit. So most folks supported expansion of tupole. That's not surprising. We did get a comment submitted the last day of the comment period by the Fish and Wildlife Service. There's some concern that allowing tupole could increase handle or encounters with listed bull trout in the lakes, in the two lakes. We don't think that that is a real issue, but we'll consider that further, that comment further, and come back with a recommendation in January. One of the proposals was to change the daily limit on kokanee in two of the upper Yakima River reservoirs, Cochise and Ketchalas. This is intended to kind of align with other major kokanee fisheries, particularly on the east side. There's a number of lakes in Region 1 and 2 that have 10 kokanee limits. The 16 kokanee limit I just mentioned, we have that in Bumping and Rimrock. We also have that in the three upper Yakima reservoirs. But those populations in the upper Yakima are propped up, supported with hatchery stocking. And we really don't have the abundant natural production that we see like over at Rimrock. So it makes sense to reduce the daily limit to align with those other waters. McCabe Pond. McCabe Pond's a small pond near Ellensburg, and this one was to, wait a minute, this is, excuse me, slides out of order here. Sorry about that. This is the response to the from the public on the Cochise and Ketchalas daily limit. Most folks agree that a 10 kokanee limit is plenty in these two lakes. And again, like Jeff mentioned, the kokanee limit would not count towards their limit for other trout in the lake, such as rainbow or cutthroat. And again, we had someone respond that they had concern for ESA-listed bull trout, but this actually, the proposal really doesn't affect ESA-listed bull trout. If anything, it reduces the number of kokanee that are removed from the lake, and those bull trout, feed on kokanee. So it would reduce the removal of their prey species. So this particular comment was a little bit odd. Okay, so here's McCabe. McCabe, we talked about that in September. It's a small pond in Ellensburg, and we had some folks approach us about allowing the use of small flotation devices, float tubes, pontoon boats, that kind of thing. I'm really not clear why it was closed to the use of floating devices, but it's been that way for quite a while. It's not a very big lake, has vegetation around the shoreline. They've beat the vegetation down. They've cut holes through the bushes to allow access for bank fishing. You may have heard the Kittitas Environmental Education Network, or KEEN, is going to be building a an interpretive center for the Yakima Canyon on the property adjacent to McCabe Lake. They've got a lot of their funding already. They own or control that property, and they really wanted to do something to try to restore the riparian vegetation, limit the damage from the bank anglers. So they supported this. I think it's a good proposal. We're not allowing motors, so it'd just be float tubes or pontoon boats, rowboats, that kind of thing. They have comments. They said it was too small for flotation devices, which will interfere with bank anglers. They'll have conflict, but I don't buy that. It's not that. It's small, but it's not that small. You can put a few people off on the lake in float tubes and still have some bank fishing. And Keene was successful in getting a LEA grant to build a fishing dock, similar to what we have on nearby Mattoon Lake, which will provide some additional bank shore fishing without folks having to, you know, knock down the bushes or cut holes. So we think this is a pretty good proposal. All right. Let's move on to the big one, Natchez River Catch and Release. This was the accounts for about half of all the responses. I think Craig mentioned 730 or something, or 750, and nearly half were on this particular proposal, which is extend catch and release for trout from Rattlesnake Creek upstream 16.6 miles to the origin of the Natchez, which is at the confluence of the Bumping and the Little Natchez River. And then the proposal that moved forward was to continue to maintain existing harvest, two trout, 12-inch minimum, in the lower 17.5 miles below the Tieton. I hope you can see this map. Back in 2001, the commission asked us to explore the possibility of setting up a catch and release section in the Natchez. And in 2003, the commission adopted a rule, and the section from the Tieton River here to Rattlesnake Creek here, it's about 10.5 river miles, went catch and release. So we've been that way for 11 years. It joins up with Rattlesnake Creek, which already was catch and release and selective gear rules, which dates back to 1990. So we had a major tributary and this middle section catch and release. What we're proposing now, or what's in front of you now, is this section right here, upriver from the Rattlesnake to the confluence of the Bumping and the Little Natchez. So that's the section that's in play. And this lower section in green down to the city of Yakima and the confluence of the Yakima, that's the 17.5-mile stretch that would remain open for harvest for two fish over 12. This color coding, this is the stream strategy map, a portion of the Region 3 stream strategy map. We've just focused in on the Natchez, and so you can see the color coding that we had for the middle section that has been catch and release now is applied, if this is approved, applies to this upper section. And so you've got all this pink would be CNR. Okay, we received over 270 public comments, probably actually more than 270, but some of those were form letters. We got greater than 80% support overall. In the Yakima Basin, we had a majority that supported it, 55, but that's where most of the opposition came from, was from local anglers. So 45% were really opposed to this. Western Washington anglers that come across to fish overwhelmingly supported more catch and release. A lot of those folks come and fish the Upper Yakima, the Canyon. They like the section that we changed back in 203, and they want to see more of it. Here's some of the comments, the support. A lot of folks said it will support tourism, promote tourism and economic benefit. Some folks mentioned the St. Joe River and the Coeur d'Alene River in Idaho. You get a quality fishing fishing destination for trout. That upper section has a pretty abundant population of West Slope cutthroat, larger West Slope cutthroat trout. So it makes it very, and it's kind of unique in that respect. It makes it very desirable. And that's the reference to the St. Joe. People also pointed out that if people want to keep fish, they can fish nearby lakes that we stock with hatchery trout. And I do want to go back just one moment. Notice, this is important. You've got all these tributaries like the Coochie Creek, Tyatin River, and all the ones that are kind of in mustard yellow. Those would remain open for harvest with a 2-fish, 10-inch minimum size. Some of them, or actually all of those, would be selective gear rules, but you can retain trout. So there are river or creek opportunities around in this general area, so we're not taking all that away. The opposition, like I said, it was almost entirely from local anglers. They prefer having some daily limit, if not two, one fish. A lot of them saying that we're pandering to the guides, the guide groups that are running trips. They promote catch and release and fly fishing, and so that's, they see that, you know, we've got these special interest groups that that are really pushing this, and the other thing is that many people already practice catch and release, and this is true. We did 3 years of Creel census back in 2002, just before we made the change, and then in 3 and 4 after we made the change, and we compared below and above where we did catch and release and where we didn't, and didn't really matter. 90% of anglers were already practicing voluntary catch and release, so only 10% of legal fish were being retained. Now, we haven't replicated that in the last decade, but we don't know if that has changed, but A lot of the local folks knew this and picked up on that fact. Another thing is they want to, they're concerned about the fact that that upper section is on the national forest, a lot of public access, and there are Forest Service campgrounds and people are camping and families are camping, and we're taking away the opportunity for them to catch a trout, you know, families and kids to catch trout and eat trout in camp. And that's a valid concern. They point out that lower 17.5 miles, and this is true, a lot of that is in private ownership and access is more difficult. Now, we do have 2 access sites, one right at the Town of Natchez and one between in the Glead area. So people that want to put in a pontoon boat or a raft or something can have access. But for bank anglers, it's more difficult down there. And that is a concern, and I share that concern. Okay, stream strategy. You just saw a piece of our map. And I just mentioned the primary change is we're proposing to increase the trout minimum size for retention. Remember those waters that were in the mustard color, those are areas where you could retain trout. We're going to go from 8 to 10 if this is approved. And this is based on data that we have from supplied by the Acoma Nation from Prosser that shows that our steelhead smolts virtually all of them are 10 inches or smaller in size, but we do have a number of steelhead that are collected at the Juvenile Evaluation Center at Prosser Dam that are between 8 and 10. And so the whole purpose of stream strategy is to provide more protection for our salmon and steelhead, and so this makes sense just to bump the minimum size up a couple inches and basically provide 100% protection for juvenile omicus that, at you know, when they're in those streams, you can't tell resident from steelhead. So this will protect those fish. The other thing we're proposing to do, and that's to reduce and or eliminate some of the winter whitefish seasons to provide greater protection for overwintering adult steelhead and bull trout. And in your notebooks back in September, there was a table that you have there that shows those changes. We don't have that on the presentation, but if you refer to that if you want to look at that further. Okay, the responses back on stream strategy, nowhere near as much as we received on the Natchez catch and release. Again, some of them, not knowing exactly what this meant, they would regret losing opportunity, but we were really careful. Spent a lot of time working on this. We started on this over a year ago, trying to figure out what streams provide real opportunity and making sure that they fell somewhere in our stream strategy, that they would still be open. We didn't really close any. All the streams that really we believe that are utilized for angling are still open in some form in that A through F strategy. Provide more catch and release. Well, that's some of the same people that commented on the Natchez rule. Again, makes the regulations more complicated. I don't know. We'll see. They've been doing it for a while on the west side, and I think people will get used to it. And eliminates the opportunity for kids in the rivers. The only thing we're really doing is, like I said, increasing the minimum size. They still get to keep fish, but they have to be 10 inches. That's it. Any questions?
Thanks. Region 3 questions. No controversy here. Good.
I wouldn't say that.
Thanks, John. Okay. Region 5.
Commissioners, thank you for the opportunity to speak to you. As mentioned before, my name is John Weinheimer. I'm here today for Cindy LeFleur. I am a district fish biologist, one of two down in Southwest Washington. Just for the record, I live in Carson, Washington, which is in Washington. So I'm going to go through a couple of proposals, starting off with the cowlets, a proposal for a two-pole and barbed hooks being allowed. Opportunity to increase harvest on hatchery steelhead, a seasonal change of June 1st to May to July 31st, basically the Cowlitz River up to the boundary at the barrier dam. Some of the responses that we've got from this proposal, most supported, however, others suggested retain the barbless hook rule, and you'll notice down a couple lines down, you'll get another comment that says no need for a barbless hook rule in this river, a comment about extending the season, this proposal from May 1st to July 31st, concerns about that it might increase snagging and flossing, and then too little space for tube holes on the banks. Another proposal for the Allokaman, South Fork Tootle, and Green Rivers, proposal to remove barbless hook requirements seasonally. This is in Cowlitz and Wakayakum counties. Allow barbed hooks when only hatchery summer steelhead are available for harvest. At this time period, there's no natural origin summer steelhead present. Salmon are not expected until mid-August, first Saturday in June through July 31st in these basins. Okay, the responses that we got, suggestion for mandatory steelhead retention. I don't have the page, but on the stream strategy that is being proposed, these rivers would be under the mandatory steelhead retention if that was to take effect. Most comments opposed based on feeling of barbless hooks should be the norm. Allowing barbed hooks will increase juvenile steelhead mortality, and then also concern over confusing fishers as to where barbed hooks are illegal and compounds enforcement issues. Swift Reservoir. Swift Reservoir is the third reservoir on the North Fork of the Lewis River. And Swift Reservoir, currently there is a reintroduction program going on to reintroduce salmon and steelhead above Swift Reservoir. So what this proposal does is try to establish a maximum size for trout. Currently we have a maximum size for salmon in the reservoir of 15 inches. The idea being that we would adjust that maximum size for trout to 15 inches to coincide with that 15-inch rule for salmon, so it just make it maybe easier to understand. I wish I would have put more slides in here, but I could talk for an hour on this reintroduction, but so lucky for you, I didn't. But what's important here is that adult salmon and steelhead are being trucked up into the reservoir. And so there is some handle of these fish. The intent for these adults is to go into the river above the reservoir and not stay in the reservoir, so they wouldn't be in the fishery for very long. But there is concern about those being inadvertently harvested. Okay, so some of the comments we've got was a suggestion to implement a fin clip rule for trout over 15 inches in size. Another consideration or another comment was to consider whatever has not been trapped by June as resident fish that will not outmigrate to the trap and allow anglers to catch and keep those fish. So that's that on the Swift. On the stream strategy, for us, in a nutshell, is we're going to close many small creeks or close to fishing, and then we have the mandatory hatchery steelhead retention. I would say overall, people generally agree with the closed and less open. Probably the concerns that we hear about down in the region are the mandatory hatchery steelhead retention in terms of concern over having to keep a fish that's in a mature condition late in the year. An example would be the Washougal River, where we get hatchery winter steelhead. People start catching those maybe as late as January and pretty poor condition and don't want to have to keep them. And then one suggestion, or I shouldn't say one suggestion, but one idea that's been floated around by several people is if you want to get these fish out of the river is increase the bag limit. And I will tell you that we have done that on a number of times through emergency regulations too when we see that our run sizes are up. Any questions? Thank you.
Thanks a lot. Good job.
Commissioners, what I'd like to do then is wrap up and talk just a minute about three proposals that were in our online webpage, so that we recommended that these not be considered for further rulemaking. But we did, in three instances, receive comments that were eight comments or more. And so I wanted to highlight those for you to just let you know that we did receive some comment on some proposals that we currently are not recommending. The first of those is a proposal to allow archery fishing for channel catfish in the Columbia River. And this is this stretch and sort of that mid-Columbia region from our Washington-Oregon border up to the I-182 bridge. We received 11 comments on this, and really the idea is folks, similar to the opportunity we have for common carp. They'd like to be able to use bow and arrow for channel catfish. Part of the concern that we have is channel catfish are typically a deep water species, so we're not sure that there's a lot of opportunity for this, and there could be some confusion with species identification, and so we have some concerns about opening up this type of fishery on channel catfish as opposed to our common carp. They're not native, and they typically move into shallower waters to spawn, and so it's easier to identify those. But we wanted to bring this to your attention that we did receive some comment. The second rule, you might recall, in 2013, the commission adopted a rule to eliminate the daily limit and size limit for bass, walleye, and channel catfish in the Columbia River from the Oregon-Washington border upstream. And we received 8 comments that were asking the commission to reinstate those rules to where they were before you took previous action. And so wanted, again, to let you know that we received some comment that people are still thinking that daily limits and size limits on these species would be good. And really the focus is on they enjoy those fisheries and they want quality fisheries for those species. And then finally wanted to include this rule. This is again, the commission took action and adopted rule requiring barbless hooks in the Columbia River for salmon and steelhead a year or so ago. And there are folks that included comments requesting that be rescinded and that barbed hooks be allowed. We had 9 comments on this topic, and as I'd indicated at the start of the presentation, we'll forward those into the North of Falcon process for further consideration relative to salmon fishing opportunities. You probably noticed in this regulation package, however, we did identify a couple of places in Southwest Washington where we think it does make sense to liberalize and allow barbed hooks where we're not seeing concerns for salmon or wild steelhead. And so we have included those in our proposals. And so those were the 3 that we chose to highlight. We did forward a link to each of the commissioners so that if you're interested in looking at the individual comments that people have provided, you have access to that, both for those rules that we're recommending move forward for further consideration, as well as those that don't. So you have that. After today, we'll make those links available to the public so the public can see all the comments that have been received to date. And so then, just to close the staff briefing and move to public comment, we're here on the December 12th at the hearing. Again, January 9, 10, we'll be bringing recommendations to the commission for your consideration for action, and then those rules would take effect July 1. And with that, I'd provide an opportunity for any last questions, and we can move into public comment.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And slide 64, my question is, was that, were those comments directed at Spring Chinook or Upriver Bright or all the above?
Commissioner Carpenter, my understanding is those were broadly stated in that they wanted to see barbed hooks allowed in the Columbia River, and it wasn't seasonal specific, that it was just in general they wanted to see that opportunity reinstated.
Thank you.
Questions? Comments? Great. I like this new system of breaking up the sport fishing rigs into
different geographic regions. It was just so arduous.
Thank you, Commissioner, and we continue to try to improve the process for rulemaking. It is very detailed by the nature of the topic, and so anything we can do that helps you make informed decisions, we're always wanting to do that. So if there's any other ideas, we're always ready. Thank you.
Can you all hear me? Yeah. Okay. Our mic system is acting up. The commission offers each citizen 3 minutes to testify on a topic in our public input section. So we'd like you to come forward, sit in front of a microphone, and tell us what you think, and listen for the beeping noise, if you would. When you hear that beeping noise, that means your time is up, and we'd like you to conclude your remarks. So I'll call you up two at a time. Paul Martini and Scott Hagen, would you come forward, please? Okay, Mr. Martini, you're first.
Madam Chair and Commissioners, for your time and consideration. I'm Paul Martini. I'm on the board of the Wild Steelhead Coalition, and I'm here to represent the viewpoints of the Wild Steelhead Coalition. We want to applaud the WDFW, that's a hard one to say, for putting proposals forward that will benefit Wild Steelhead recovery. The WSC researched and reached out to stakeholders to develop a rules proposal package for the basin to support wild steelhead recovery, and we're pleased that the department moved forward recommending 7 out of 8 of our proposal recommendations. We'd like to confirm our support regarding the strategy for the Columbia Basin with a few adjustments for the following. Notably, the WSC adds organizational support for the mandatory retention of hatchery steelhead in all the proposed Region 5 rivers. I know this is a controversial issue, and Commissioner Holzmiller, I'm going to come back to that as well. Regarding the elimination of the 20-inch size for retaining fin clip trout and steelhead, we support that, but request that the mandatory retention of adipose fin clip trout and steelhead on the Grand Ronde River be included in that proposal as well. Again, we'll talk a little bit about that. On the Columbia River and the tributaries regarding selective gear, we support it, but request that all non-fin-clipped rainbow trout be released unharmed throughout the Columbia River Basin, including Assotin Creek and the tributaries not listed in the Metow River rule proposal. The Assotin Creek catch-and-release rainbow trout we support, but again, the WSC requests that all non-fin-clipped rainbow trout be released unharmed and not allow harvest of 2 non-fin-clipped rainbow trout. And they're a resident form of wild steelhead, and we're concerned with that. On the Grand Ronde, Commissioner Holzmiller, I greatly appreciate your comments earlier. We support the mandatory release of or retention of fin-clipped trout and steelhead. We support that with the caveat that the etiquette or reduction of experience in the lower 2-mile section of the river may be problematic, and urge that the department to consider management strategies to address that issue. And your comments go a long way to our understanding there, too. We're trying to find a way to make this work. We're very much in favor of retaining or retention of hatchery steelhead, but we have to find a way to make the experience work for multiple parties. On the Natchez River, again, it was interesting to hear that received the most comments. We support the mandatory catch and release of rainbow trout on the Natchez River from Rattlesnake Creek above. But as a revision of the proposal, we would request that the catch and release of all wild rainbow trout from the mouth of the Natchez upstream to further protect the resident life form of wild steelhead. Whether these fish, we recognize them as rainbow or as steelhead, it's hard to tell when they're in the river. And we want to be able to protect that broad range of species. Very, very quickly, we'd request that you make wild steelhead recovery and conservation a priority in the 2015 rule proposals for Puget Sound and the Olympic Peninsula. I've got a bit more to read, but I think you guys know how important this is. So I'm going to turn it over to the next guy, and I did that right on time.
Great.
There you go.
Thank you. Very good. Okay, Jason Rolf. You here? Jason Rolfe?
I'm back here.
Oh, would you please go back? Yes. Time's up, so. Thanks.
Yeah.
Mr. Hagen, go ahead.
Good afternoon. My name is Scott Hagen. I was born and raised in Bellingham, Washington, and I've been fishing for steelhead for nearly 50 years and on the Grand Ronde for nearly 20. The bottom two or so miles has been catch and release for as long as I can remember. Those 2 miles are the most heavily fished section of the entire river, that 180-mile-long river. It's been my experience fishing it for all these years that more than 95% of the fishermen on that 2 mile section of river are fly fishing. It's rare to see somebody that isn't a fly fisherman. Now, I strongly support the removal of hatchery steelhead from the river, but I am concerned that opening that stretch to catch and kill will lead to even more crowded conditions and a clash of techniques and certainly etiquette. So I would propose that the Grand Ronde River from the mouth to the bridge about 2 miles upstream be made fly fishing only. Since there have only been a very few people that weren't fly fishing on this river in this section, then this will not be a big change. And it's only the last 2 miles. Thank you for your attention.
Thank you. Jim McRoberts. Hey, Mr. Rolf or Rolf?
Yeah.
Rolf.
Thank you, everyone, for the opportunity to come and speak. I am a volunteer with the Wild Steelhead Coalition that Mr. Martini works with. I'm also an avid angler, and I work at a tackle shop up in Seattle called Emerald Water Anglers. I won't repeat everything that Mr. Martini said, but I just want to echo that I also, as an angler, as somebody who works in fishing, I support protecting wild steelhead throughout the Columbia Basin. I support rules that will work towards removing hatchery steelhead from those systems in order to help wild steelhead populations rebound and grow. I personally believe, and all the science that I've read and you know, everything I'm involved with, I believe that removing hatchery fish is the best way to increase and restore and really make these fisheries world-class fisheries like they used to be before I was born. And that's what I would love to see again. I'd love to be able to experience that. I come to you not as a scientist, not as a board member or anything like that, but just as a fisherman that really believes that protecting wild steelhead throughout our state, making wild steelhead management a priority, is really what we should be doing, and I hope that all the rules will reflect that as we continue to go forward. So thank you all very much for the opportunity.
Thanks. Nice job. Bill Redman.
Okay, Mr. McRoberts. The Commissioners and Director Anderson. My name is Jim McRoberts. I've lived in the state of Washington since 1967 and fished for steelhead all of that time in various places. I worked on, as a citizen member of the statewide steelhead planning commission years ago, and I believe in all that we came up with. My only concerns here are for the Grand Ronde River and the lower 2.5 miles. Mr. Hagen spoke very eloquently about that. what I want to just add to his statement is the Grand Ronde is 180 miles long. There's 34 miles of it in the state of Washington, and only 2.5 miles is less than 7%, or about 7% of the river. It would be a very minor change to make that fly fishing only in relation to the whole rest of the river and in the whole outlook of things. The only thing else that I would add to Mr. Hagan's testimony is that we would like to see no fishing from a boat or raft to be allowed in that section of the river, because the river's narrow. If somebody anchors in the middle of a run, it's ruined for the rest of the people, which could hold 7 or 8 more people on either side. So that would be another thing to consider for that part of the Grand Ronde. Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Thank you. Okay, Mr. Redman.
About that lower 2+ miles of the Grand Ronde River.
I first fished that marvelous stretch of Steelhead Water in October 1964, 50 years ago from 2 months ago. Except for some time living in the East, I've fished it every fall since. And even though it's a 7-hour drive from my home, I consider it my home Steelhead River and the finest sport fishing opportunity available in the state of Washington. As Scott mentioned, this stretch has been managed for catch and release for a number of years, maybe the only river in the state managed that way. And in spite of that, or more likely because of that, it is one of the most crowded steelhead reaches in the state, exceeded only by a few clusters immediately around hatcheries. But it works because with selective regs, anglers share the river well, starting at the top of a run and working downstream slowly. Cast, fish out the cast, step down, repeat. Anglers don't cut in just downstream from others and disrupt the flow. Stress is minimized, fishing is maximized. Now comes 2015 with harvest of hatchery fish with this proposal. Lots of anglers camped in the small city of RVs on the Snake just below the Grand Ronde mouth are likely to invade the lower Grand Ronde, and the social consequences are likely to be a major problem. Conflicts between those who pick one spot and stay there and those who work down through a run will increase and stress will go up. It may even lead some of us who have loved this stretch for a long time to abandon it and go elsewhere. I confess to being conflicted on this subject because I believe very strongly in getting the hatchery fish out of the river. But as Jim mentioned, we've got 30-some miles of Grand Ronde in the state of Washington where hatchery fish may be kept or may be required to keep, and about 22 miles of the Snake River downstream from the Grand Ronde to the top of Lower Granite Pool that will all be available for retention of steelhead. So my first choice would be to leave the regulation the way it is now. My second choice, as the other two said, make it fly fishing only, maybe the only fly fishing only steelhead water east of the Cascades, and allow the harvest of hatchery fish. One more point.
Sure.
The very best way to reduce the number of hatchery adults is to reduce or eliminate putting in hatchery smolts a year or two before that. And so with that, I thank you for the opportunity to comment. And I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thanks very much. Nice job. That concludes the public hearing on this topic. And we